Hello, friends. Welcome to the Logistics of Logistics podcast. My name is Joe Lynch. Thank you so much for joining us today. On the Logistics of Logistics, I talk to experts in logistics and transportation, warehousing, fulfillment, supply chain, and of course, technology. And during these interviews, I'm always the one asking the dumb questions. I ask the dumb questions so you don't have to.
Today's topic is the freight broker's secret weapon with my friend Nick Schrock. Nick is the CEO and founder of Valaru, an outsourcing provider that focuses specifically on the logistics industry. The freight brokerage business is a tough one, and you need a secret weapon. Nick Schrock has that secret weapon, so please take a listen to our conversation.
How's it going, Nick?
I'm doing pretty good. How are you?
Great, great. Nick, please introduce yourself and your company and where you're calling from today.
Yeah, my name is Nick Schrock, CEO and founder of Valaru, calling from San Diego. At Valaru, we do outsourcing, nearshoring for logistics companies.
Very nice. Very nice. Congrats on being in San Diego on January 30th.
Yeah. I was just in St. Louis, Missouri last week, and it was not pleasant. It was very windy, very cold. I was happy to get back.
I got a call from my neighbor, and he's in Florida for the winter. And I thought, oh, okay, we got 5 inches of snow. That's why he's calling. He doesn't call to say, let's talk about the game. That's how you doing? Nope. I'm pretty sure he's calling to say, hey, what's it like up there? Anyway, Valaru, who do you work with? Who's your main customers at Valaru?
Yeah, I'd say our main customers are primarily freight brokers, right? There's a lot of transactions, a lot of work that needs to go in to make those customers successful. So outsourcing nearshoring is a good fit for them. Followed by asset-based companies. We do a lot of dispatch work for them. And probably our smallest subset of customers is actually shippers, working with them just to do their customer service, order entry, things like that.
So what problems are you solving for them? What problem do they have that you solve?
So I'd say it's more of the employment market shifted a lot in the logistics industry. And so what you used to be able to hire either young folks or people that's like you could have them do track and trace, carrier sales, but load building, accounts receivable, collections, functions like that. But most of those roles require high levels of activity, right? We want our carrier sales reps making 100, 200 phone calls a day. And it's not like that's all I did coming out of school was make tons of phone calls. It's very difficult to find folks to do that. So anything that's high activity, high labor, lots of a very good engine, we tend to fit very well in those roles to support different brokerages and teams.
Yeah. And we'll get into more detail about this in a minute. But when we think about most developed economies, including the United States, we have fewer kids. When I was young, we always talked about this population problem. And the population problem was we had a crisis. We are growing way too fast. And if you look at growth in the world population, it's up. I think it'll probably peak at, I think they said 10, 11 million, and then it'll start coming back down. And the reason is because the developed economies have fewer children. So I'm from the baby boomer generation. When I was a kid, our parents' generation would always say, oh my God, we had 10, 11 kids in our family. It was weird if you had 5 or 6 in my generation. Now it's weird when somebody says I have kids. And that is the case all over Europe. They have a real problem. We will never have that as bad as those countries because this is a settler nation. We still have immigrants who want to come here. But we also, in addition to having maybe fewer people in the generation right behind the baby boomers, right behind Gen X, we have another problem. This is a wealthy country. People have options. My kids expect a lot more in the workplace than I did. I expected very little. I remember being an engineer and going out and collecting garbage out of the parking lot before a big meeting because the boss said, we don't want our customers to think we're low rent. So I had to go be a garbage man for an hour and a half. And I can't envision the boss asking an engineer to go do that in today's world. It's just be like, nope, that's beyond the pale. So we have fewer people. We have, in addition, people who are better educated and come from a wealthier background, the expectations have completely changed. We're going to have to look around and see how do we fill our talent with people that make sense and who also think, hey, this is a fantastic job. A really crappy job in one part of the country is a godsend for somebody else in another part of the country or in a different country completely.
Right. Yeah. And you bring up a really good point because I listened to a really good talk at CSCMP. I forget her name, but she was just talking about macroeconomics and the problem that you're discussing. Hey, we want our government to grow 3% a year, but our population is growing 1%. So how do we make up that gap? And you either have to be more efficient with AI and technology and do these things, or you have to leverage other talent pools. So I think overall, this is a good problem for the US. US jobs are converting to being higher paying, more technical, more managerial roles. But it presents the problem that businesses are going to have to solve. It's like how loads still need to get built. Collection calls still need to get made. How do you do that? And the easy answer is it's something that's been around since the 90s, right? There's talent all across the world. And through technology that we have and other companies have developed and that we leverage, it's just easier than ever to do.
Yeah. And we're going to talk about where your people are at in a minute, but we are now starting to connect with Latin America, which makes sense. We've never done enough business with them. They're close by. They're in the same time zones as we are. And I don't know what percentage it is, but there's a large percentage of the population in the United States that are Latin American background. So it's a natural fit for us to work with Latin America. It's a natural for this country in general to reach out to the rest of the world because we are the rest of the world.
Yeah. And I think a cultural fit and also just English fluency and English accents and things like that all factor into who people decide to outsource with. So.
Right. Exactly. So let's switch gears for a sec. Nick, tell us a little bit about you. Where'd you grow up? Where'd you go to school? Give us some career highlights before you started Valaru. And then what hole you saw in the market? Why did you start Valaru?
Yeah. So I grew up in a town on the Illinois side, St. Louis, Missouri, called Waterloo, Illinois. So grew up there. A lot of my family's still there, hence why I was in St. Louis last week. Went to school pretty close to there at McKendree University, but moved out to San Diego maybe 8 to 10 years ago, somewhere around then. And when I moved out there, I started working with Flock Freight. So when I was with them, they aren't the behemoth they are today. It was about 10 to 12 of us in the back room of another carrier that our CEO owned, just trying to figure it out, doing quotes on a calculator to send to shippers. But we ran into a problem, which was we're a startup. We're trying to 10X year over year without 10Xing our payroll, right? How do we grow incredibly fast without burning so much cash that we get? So a natural solution was like, hey, let's look at outsourcing. Can we do some of these lower level tasks, either near shore or offshore, so that way we can focus on selling and building customer relationships? Our VP of sales at the time and the owner of the company asked me, it's like, hey, Nick, will you try this? Will you take it over? So we started off with just a SDR team, sales development representatives, generating leads for us, which was successful. Then we built quoting admins offshore. And that's really where I cut my teeth in building these relationships in the Philippines, finding people that do have logistics talent that aren't just number pushers. And it was incredibly successful for us. I think when I left, we had maybe 60 people onshore and 80 to 100 offshore, and we were just kicking. So that's where the idea for Valaru came from, was like, hey, if I can do this for us and it's helped us grow, I'm sure some other logistics companies would benefit from it as well.
I interviewed Oren Zaslansky, the founder of Flock Freight, a few times. And first off, they're a B Corp, which I think is very interesting because I think he told the story about when they went to become a B Corp, and B Corp means you have this social mission. And the first thing the B Corp people said is, oh no, you guys are in trucking and transportation. That is the opposite of what we wanted. But they're saying, no, we're part of the solution. By the way, I always say that some of that stuff with the sustainability crowd bugs me because you still want to live indoors and eat every day, yet you don't want trucking. Right? But he convinced them this is a force for good. And Flock Freight saves a ton of money for customers. But on top of that, they are also really good for the environment, which is why they are a B Corp. So fantastic company to come from.
Yeah. And he's, I know it's, you don't really get to interview former employees, right? Because I worked with the guy for a number of years. He's brilliant, man. That guy is really smart, knows what he's doing.
He's a force of nature. That's what I've said on my podcast. He's a force.
Yeah, he's great too. And, but sometimes it's like, you think of Steve Jobs, guy was famously a nightmare to work for. It's Oren was even, it's like when I started there, I was mainly just doing sales. And it's like, I got a ton of one-on-one time, a ton of, he helped me grow into the entrepreneur I am today. So I'm a big shout out to that guy. He's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, he's fantastic. I will put a link to my interviews with Oren in the show notes. So anyway, let's talk about the freight broker's secret weapon. So freight brokerage, I think there's 27,000. My good friend, Kevin Hill, has this company now called Brush Pass Research. And I think he said there's 27, 28,000 freight brokers. This has been an ongoing thing. For a long time, I would say there's 17,000 freight brokers. And then somebody said, no, there's 23,000. Now it's 20-some thousand freight brokers. But they come in all different sizes. And I think Kevin had some research that he put on LinkedIn not so long ago that said 80% of the volume for freight brokerages is in the top, 1,200 or 1,500. And we recognize a lot of those companies. Those would be the C.H. Robinsons of the world. They would be TQL. We know many names. A lot of them are universal or standard or American. We're never creative until recently on the naming. And those companies get 80% of it. But they have a few secret weapons that we'll talk about here for a second. They're not secret weapons. They spend a lot on technology. And they are the biggest outsourcers, I believe. I believe a lot of those companies are outsourcing to other countries through your company and others. And they have lowered their unit economics. Please elaborate, Nick.
Yeah. And I would say it's not a secret. I'd be shocked if any of the top 20 didn't do this. I've talked to most of them, most of their C-suite, and just discussions on this and what their plans on how they're going to further leverage outsource nearshore talent. But I think it primarily comes from a place of, it allows them to provide a better product to their shippers, right? It's cheaper, but because it's cheaper, then you can have more heads solving the problem. You can then get better quality people that want to do this work offshore than just having a kid fresh out of college in San Diego I'm getting offered 10,000 more to do a social media job down the street. Why would I continue making 150 dials a day doing carrier sales? So I think it comes from, if you're not outsourcing, it's very hard for you to provide the level of service that these big 3PLs are providing, just because they have more butts in seats. They're able to have more effort driving to the solution, and they're having better unit economics as well.
Yeah. And what we mean by unit economics is their cost for a transaction goes down every year because they're using technology, which we all are trying to use. They're using technology, but they're also using companies like yours to lower their cost of employee costs. And by the way, I've said this many times in my podcast. I'm an automotive guy originally, and I was part of moving stuff overseas. So we would always talk about low-cost countries. We were doing stuff in China and Mexico. And what invariably happens when you start outsourcing to those, the first thought is, we save 20%, we save 30%. But what happens over time is those become knowledge centers. And all of a sudden, it's not just they're less expensive, they're better because they have invested in that business where we stopped investing in it. And that happens all over the world. And by the way, I haven't mentioned it lately, but in the 80s, Ireland, little island, had tons of people who were English speaking, more or less. And we would argue with them about that in some cases. English speaking and educated, understand our world very well. They didn't want to leave their country. And so we moved a ton of back office stuff for tech and banking. Now, Ireland is the second wealthiest country in Europe. So it's not as if these are just save money and it's a cheap solution and it works okay. These are inexpensive solutions that continue to get better every single day. And there is probably very little, if any, degradation in service from working with these countries?
Yeah. And I think it just comes down to almost just want, like being prideful in your job, where it's like, hey, you're a collection. If you told someone here in, especially in San Diego or really anywhere in the country, yeah, I do collections for a logistics company. That's a good job, but you're not saying you're a doctor. It doesn't have a prestige to it. Where if you're in the Philippines or Belize and you go, oh yeah, I work for a US company in their accounting department. It's like, people are going to look, it's like, how'd you get that job? And it's they have pride for what they do. So having that pride and that effort towards the company, what more could you ask for as a business owner? Someone that wants to work for you and is proud and is going to tell their friends about it. It's fantastic.
One of my daughters had some logistics experience. She worked for a logistics company with me over the summer. This is years and years ago. And so when she graduated from college, her last semester, a number of logistics companies said, hey, come interview. So we're like 4.5 hours from Chicago here. So she drove to Chicago. And I remember I talked to her. I said, so are you seriously considering that job? She goes, no, I just wanted to go to Chicago and they're paying. So I'm bringing a friend. So her and her girlfriend go over. And I go, why aren't you considering it? She goes, what? So I can make 100 phone calls a day? I didn't go to college for 4 years to make 100 phone calls a day. And I was thinking, okay, so the expectation of somebody coming out of school at 22 is I'm not going to make 100 phone calls a day. I don't think that's where your head was at when you got out of school. And it certainly wasn't where my head was at, because I did the lowest of low work. And if it was repetitive or boring or tedious or low status, nobody cared. Again, that's partly because I came out, I'm the tail end of the baby boomers. We were lucky to get into the workforce. We weren't looking and saying, I expect more. And so each generation wants more. And by the way, Nick, if you have children, same thing. You're going to want more for your kids than what you had yourself. So this isn't a bad thing, but that's the expectation of American workers. I want more sooner.
Yeah. And overall, it's great for our country. It's exciting for our future that every generation is better than the last and has a better environment to work in. You could get into politics and all these different things and argue that point, but I think just this framework alone sets a really good like stage for where the U.S. is. Okay, jobs are getting higher level, more higher paying, and things like that. It's a very good thing.
Yep. So when somebody can work with Valaru, they can lower their costs, but if they're not really getting a degraded product. But when it comes to talent, you can get it. You can recruit better. I'm going to ask you to elaborate on this. You can recruit better. You can onboard. And you can train and retain. And you're saying, you, since it's your main business, you're not a freight broker. You're not in that business. You're in the business of recruiting, onboarding, training, and retaining great talent for your customers. That is your sole focus. Please elaborate on why you do that better and why you're that secret weapon for your customers.
Yeah. And a lot of our customers go, Nick, why don't you just, for one, I think this is a good thing you should ask when exploring outsourcing is, hey, if you're talking to a business process outsourcing company, that's what we're called, BPOs. If you're talking to us or a competitor, ask them if they own a 3PL also.
I don't want to compete against you, Nick.
You don't want to compete against your vendor, which I'm telling you, a lot of people end up having. They also, that's how they started. They had a 3PL and then they branched off and started their own center. But anyway, that's a different point. But people ask me, hey, Nick, it's like, why don't you start a 3PL? You're so good at this. You're so good at this. And a friend of mine once said, yeah, two people got rich during the gold rush. It's like, people that were mining gold and the guy that sold shovels. I'm selling
That's
shovels.
That's right. That's where Levi Strauss was selling shovels and canvas pants, right? Yeah,
that's what I'm doing. I'm selling shovels and pickaxes. So that's what we do. It's exactly what you said, is we are experts in outsourcing. We're not just saying, hey, Joe, here's a great talented person. Good luck. We'll give them a week or two of logistics training. What we're doing is we're making sure that, one, they're for majority of roles, they're coming in with logistics experience, meaning they've worked for a brokerage before. They know how freight moves. And then we're also managing that talent's day to day. We're doing the one-on-ones, we're tracking their KPIs, we're measuring everything. And yes, they're still 100% dedicated to the 3PLs we work for, but we're being a true partner, taking ownership in the results that they're driving and just being and recruiting the best talent. Like you mentioned, we have 5 full-time recruiters. We're not doing anything fancy in that reason, just lots of phone calls, lots of ads, lots of interviews. We have 3 interviews on our side before our client makes the final decision. And then we'll also create standard operating procedures for everything we do. I think if you know, you've worked in the industry, it's like most of the time when you onboard with a logistics company, they go, sit with Jeff. Jeff will show you how to do this.
Tribal knowledge. You'll know everything in a few weeks.
Exactly. So we'll record all of that stuff, everything they do, and we'll actually take it out of that recording, write it down, put out step-by-step guides for everything we do for our clients. So they have a more structured onboarding process. And we'll do that unique to every single one of our clients that we onboard.
I love it. Love it. So what countries are your people located in? And also why?
Yeah, I think why is a good answer. So originally we were in the Philippines, and that's still where we are today. That's where the bulk of our talent is. And we are there primarily for the English, right? 90%+ of people in the Philippines speak English. They were a U.S. territory through the 1940s. So it's also an American English, which means the accent's very slight. So we're able to get people that are very conversational. Compare that to, say, India. India's got great English, but it's a British English. So they were a British territory. It makes it a little bit rougher on the ears sometimes. So that's why we went to the Philippines to go there. We've recently, which was something we're really excited about, where I've been spending most of my time, is we've moved into Belize, which is a small country right outside of Mexico. And going back into like why we pick a country, is Belize is one of the few countries in Central and South America that is their primary language is English, meaning 100% of the population speaks English and is fluently having that. There's a little bit of Creole accent, which is honestly nice. I feel like you're in Jamaica just having a conversation, but it's so slight. Most of the people we hire, you can't even tell they're from another country, but it's been massive for our company. And we went there, we've expanded because we do have great talent in the Philippines, but a lot of our customers say, hey, I want something in the same time zone, or hey, I want to be able to go visit my team. Philippines is beautiful, but it's 16 hours away. So that's why we looked at different countries. We explored Colombia, Guatemala, Mexico, and we ended up settling on Belize, primarily for the English and just the majority of the country's college educated, infrastructure solid.
Yep. And there is some advantage to the Philippines. I know other outsourcing companies are moving to Philippines because they are on the opposite time as we are. And so they can manage the night stuff. And by the way, certain things don't have to happen in the same time zone. But also, I'm assuming, maybe I'll ask rather than assume, are some of your people in the Philippines working on U.S. schedules?
I'd say the majority is U.S. schedules. And that's more of just outside of logistics, almost every other industry prioritizes the Philippines over other countries because the English is so good, the population is so educated. So what's happened in the Philippines is business process outsourcing is their number one industry. So lots of folks want to work U.S. hours, prioritize that for a number of different reasons. But same with us. I'd say 80% of our staff are working U.S. hours. And then, like you mentioned, third shift, second shift is a really good solution in the Philippines as well.
Yeah. And by the way, as far as working day to day, I work with some freelancers. I also have somebody in Colombia that I work with. And through Lean Solutions, one of your competitors, it works really well. Somebody said, how do you manage somebody with Colombia? I was like, the same as I manage somebody who lives 45 minutes away from me. We're all relatively on the same time zone and we have remote calls. It's no big deal. We use Teams like anywhere else. And to me, it makes no sense not to be using a service like yours. To me, it's taking a big chance. And by the way, let me throw one other thing out there. you were working with so many people with managing their back office that you and your company are starting to get insights into the industry that others people will never have, because they're running one freight brokerage. You're in effect running dozens. So you all of a sudden have a view of the world where you're like, oh, it's an increasingly big problem, this. And so I imagine a lot of times when your customers say, hey, Nick, what about you? Go, yeah, here's how we're solving it elsewhere.
Yeah. And a lot of times it's like, one, we're not going to share anything that's proprietary that anyone's doing.
Of course.
You're 100%. It's on a weekly basis that we're working with someone and we notice it's, oh, they are taking the long road for this. Or, hey, we should introduce them to this technology company that's been able to automate this. We don't need to be spending 4 hours a day. Let's introduce them to this technology company, let them automate it and just be more efficient. You're 100%. It's one of the funnest things that we do is just being able to be like, hey guys, have you thought about it, doing it this way? And they just get instant value just from that one conversation.
Yep. This also reminds me, Peter Drucker, years ago, he was a professor and he wrote a number of books. And he often said that if you have a function within your business where the department head can never become the CEO of the company, then maybe you should consider outsourcing that part of the business. And we've done that in a lot of cases. You see the automotive suppliers, or the automotive companies outsource virtually everything. And what they do in-house is assembly. And of course, the engineering and design, they do a lot of that, but they partner with that and they're responsible for the sales function. Increasingly, we see all sorts of companies like that say, we are going to focus on selling. We're going to focus on our brand. We're going to focus on certain areas and we're going to outsource the rest and let somebody else be the expert in the stuff that we don't want to double down on. We do it all the time. This is just the latest. And I think to some of us who maybe grew up saying cradle to grave employment, where you go at 22 years old and you stay till you're 65, that isn't a thing anymore. So we're starting to see very different employment relationships. And I think these partnerships that you guys are doing with your customers completely make sense in Drucker's perspective.
Yeah. And I just reiterate, it's like, it's what's best for the customer. It's what's best for the shipper. It allows logistics companies to provide a higher level of service than they would otherwise be able to. And what we were saying a little bit earlier, it's better for the local employees as well. You'll be able to attract higher talent. You'll have the margin to actually pay people what they deserve in the United States. And it's really just a win-win. It's like you're placing the adequate talent where it should be. You're just broadening your scope from the borders of the US to now you can pull from the entire world.
Yeah, it reminds me, a few years back, somebody came, they were doing door to sign this petition. And the petition they wanted me to sign was a furniture company in the area was closing a factory, local factory, and they were moving it overseas. And I looked into it. The reason they were closing is they struggled to get headcount in the factory here. And they wanted me to sign this petition. And I said, my great grandparents, when they came to this country, if you said, oh, you can go work in this furniture factory, it would have been such a cool job. Say it to me or my kids, be like, oh man, I've gotten spoiled. I'm thankful, but I've gotten spoiled that I don't have to do that work and I can do a better work. The job of the back office is oftentimes looked as drudgery here and maybe a very low status job. Maybe there's a part, first off, there's parts of this country that would say I'd gladly do it, but there's other parts of the world that say that is a great job. That is my step into the logistics world. And I'm happy to start on the bottom rung.
Yeah. And I envision this is just going to continue to climb the employment ladder to where eventually it's going to be, we are going to be talking managers. We are going to be talking these like higher end roles will be elsewhere in the world, but people in US are going to keep climbing that ladder as well. I think US employment is going to maintain at this really low rate just because we don't have the population growth.
You mean the unemployment rate?
The unemployment rate. Sorry. Yes. Thank you. The unemployment rate is going to remain low, and that's just a good thing for the U.S. It'll force wages to rise while giving business owners and executives the leverage to drive a really good product for their customer. And At the end of the day, that's all we're all trying to do, is just drive value to our customers. How do we be more valuable? How do we have more impact? And we help people do that. Our technology companies help people do that. So if you're not leveraging all of these, you're really, at the end of the day, we're just doing a disservice to whoever we're working for, our employees and our customers.
Yep. Yep. So we've seen in the logistics space, those 25,000, 28,000, whatever freight brokers, the top 1,200, top 1,500, they are using services like yours. They are also investing quite a bit in technology. And so their economic costs are just going, their unit economic costs are getting better and better. And if you don't follow suit, you're going to suffer. And it always reminds me when I ran a little 3PL, I was the general manager, COO. And I remember, I won't mention the brokerage, but they had must have had backhauls for all the lanes that they were, and I didn't. And I remember their costs were like so much lower on all these lanes. And I was like, I was in disbelief that I'm looking at these numbers. And I was like, how are they doing it so much cheaper than I am? And I was like, I couldn't figure it out. And then I was like, oh, it must be they have backhauls. And I was like, how'd they get backhauls for all of these so fast? It's a huge brokerage. And
yeah,
they said, oh, we will get backhauls for every one of these. And we will come in 30, 40% lower than Joe's costs. And I was like, I couldn't compete. And I feel like that those moments, they happen to everybody in this business. And technology will get that for you, but also a BPO partner who can get some things done for less money and maybe even better quality because it's a valued job. Then if you're going to bump into that and you're going to say, how are they doing that? And by the way, I've talked to people about their back BPO. Everybody's doing it. The top companies, especially.
Yeah. You want to hear a funny story about even, because a lot of times technology is almost, it's a little bit of a facade sometimes and how they're actually accomplishing these things. So I had this epiphany. I was interviewing a candidate who used to work for Uber Eats. And maybe it was Uber, it was DoorDash. It was one of these food delivery sites. And I'm like, oh, that's a great job. You're working for this technology company. I'm thinking they're doing some high level task. And I'm like, oh, tell me about what you did for them. Is the orders would come through an app and then they would call the restaurant and place the order. And it like broke my mind. I'm like, wait, this tech, my app doesn't go straight to the restaurant? Nope, it goes to the Philippines. They outsource it. And then that person calls the restaurant. I'm like, oh, these food deliveries, and maybe it's changed. This was a few years ago. But at the time, it's like, they're just a BPO. No, that's... You're just, no wonder my order gets messed up sometimes. It's because it's going through a third routed party before it gets delivered. So I thought it was really interesting of how many people are outsourcing and what people have done this different task for. It was for sure a shock to me.
Yeah, I talk to people like you on my podcast and you're doing great work. And then we always make the assumption that when you talk to shippers and some people who you would think are using all the latest and greatest technology, find out there's a lot of manual tasks. And not everybody lives in the perfect podcast world. Nobody's on my podcast saying a lot of our processes are manual. It's not something you want to promote about your business. But getting back to it, we're talking about the freight broker secret weapon. And again, it's probably not even that much of a secret at this point, but we all, everybody in the freight brokerage business, everybody at 3PL, even shippers, we all have to find a way to lower our costs. And again, technology, part of that solution for some companies. But also we have to do a better job with our talent. We have to be able to recruit, onboard them properly. Onboarding is so important because it is a big part of turnover. Somebody who never got their feet on the ground in a job is going to quit or get fired much more likely. So onboarding, super important. Retaining them and training them, super important. And again, most freight brokers don't specialize in that. They, even though they might say we work really hard to get a great team, but if you're all working remote and trying to get that, to develop a culture for your back office, not easy. It's not easy to develop the right culture. It's not easy to develop a team that is cohesive when they're all schlepping around in their house by themselves. And that so many people now in the US who might take those jobs say, I'm going to do something remote. I don't want to go to an office.
Yeah, I agree 100%.
Yeah. And one other thing, and I think we talked, might, I don't know if we touched on this earlier, insights. So you're running a business that is the back office for so many businesses. So all of a sudden, where I might run a freight broker and I have certain insights that go, oh, you know what we're not doing right? This and this. You're running the back office of dozens of freight brokers and you're seeing trends before they would ever see it. And you're having insights that are better. You're basically supercharged and you're able to bring solutions from, and I know you're not sharing anything proprietary, but you might say, we can use the same technology we're using over here at three or four other companies. So you are supercharged in that back office.
Yeah, that's a good benefit that honestly never gets talked about, is, and it probably comes up once a week. It's just, like you mentioned, if it's proprietary or something to do with something special for them, it's like, we're not going to share that with other brokerages. But if you're not leveraged, if something can be automated that we're doing, and there's a technology that already exists, I want you to use that. What's good for the brokerage business is good for us. They'll grow, they'll be more profitable, they'll demand more seats for other places. So most of the time it's technology, but other times, hey, this is how we normally do this. This is industry standard for this type of role. And we'll make recommendations there that is just an immediate ROI for the customer. It's a great point. It's like almost never gets brought up, but it's also a super fun part of our job. Either me just working with other owners or account managers, just seeing something. It's also, as you're working, it's not fun to do things inefficiently. So especially if you know a better way to do it, we're always trying to bring it up to be more efficient.
Yep.
A good point.
When I worked in automotive, we would outsource stuff to lower cost countries, China, Mexico, wherever, Korea. And what people always assume is, oh, so they just have low cost labor. That's why it's so much better. But what happened over time is that became an area that they specialized in and we no longer specialized in it. And so it was something that after a while you're like, yeah, it's lower cost, but it's just better. We can't do it. We can't do it nearly for the cost, but also we can't do it as well. And that happens a lot of places in our economy. And I don't think people think about it that way, but it's never, I don't think low cost is the whole answer. And I know that's the exciting one to start is, hey, you're going to make my unit economic costs much better. But what I think they're going to realize, and this is why we called it the freight broker secret weapon, is it's not just lower cost. It's really having a partner that drives efficiency and effectiveness. It's not just cheaper, it's better. And that is lost in these conversations.
Yeah, I think cost is what gets people in the door. And it's, oh, let's try it for these third shift. It's like people hate working overnight. So let's just outsource it there. So it's usually where we, quote, get our foot in the door and start there. But then once you work with people and you're like, oh man, this person's a rock star. They're like, great. How do I give them more things? How do I hire more people like that? And when you realize, wait, it's easier. I hate that word easier, but it's definitely easier to find a rock star over here where this under leveraged talent pool, than now I'm having to pay 6+ figures to hire that same person in the States. It's just a business accelerator on a number of different dimensions.
Yep. Let's wrap this bad boy up. And oh, before I forget, maybe I said this earlier, but I'm going to say it one more time. I think that we need to start looking at the world that we're in here in the freight brokerage space. We always have carrier partners. We chose not to buy trucks for good reason. It's a hard business. Let the truckers do that. The trucking companies do that. We also, in many cases, say, we bought a TMS off the shelf and maybe we customized after that. But we got visibility partners. We've got freight fraud partners in highway. We're using partners like Denim for factoring, MacroPoint, Project 44, dynamic pricing from Green Screens. We don't go develop these businesses because it's too hard. So we take for granted that we need those partners. I think increasingly we're going to need BPO partners, and that's what you guys are. And I think it's coming. Because if you were to say maybe 3-4 years ago, do I need visibility? It was, yeah, I think my TMS does that. Now you're like, no, I'm going to use Project 44 and Descartes and MacroPoint. I'm going to use all those. dynamic pricing, relatively new. But as soon as you see it, you're like, I need what Green Screens has. Give it to me. And I think this is the same with what you guys are doing with BPO. As soon as you see it, you're like, I have to have it. And again, I think companies like yours are going to grow like a weed for good reason.
Yeah. And then it's just finding out who's your best partner. If I'd say a good portion of your listeners or people listening to this podcast are maybe already outsourcing, if they're not ecstatic with what they're doing, if you're just pacing that, I would just say that's not the industry, right? Like, as just like all 3PLs aren't great, aren't going to deliver on-time deliveries, all PPOs aren't great, right? Everyone outsourcing isn't doing a good job at this. So explore it, figure it out, talk to other BPOs, figure out who's a better culture fit for you. And then you can go from there. Yeah.
Yep. Nick, you need to put a big bow on this. I'm going to summarize the best of my knowledge here. I think, again, why we need the freight broker's secret weapon, and I would say it's not even that much of a secret anymore. You need to lower your costs because unit economics, we have had for 2 years a down market, 22 months I read the other day. And finding talent, recruiting them, onboarding them properly, retaining them, training them on the latest and greatest, that is your business. And again, not every broker who's listening says, yes, that's what we specialize in. Getting trucks for your carriers, insights on the business, how to make it more efficient. I would say you're going to be better at that just because you do it more. And then having the ability to drive efficiency through automating and just, again, bringing more heads to the party. Nick, before we hit record, you mentioned your 2-for-1 on the headcount. Please explain what that is before we go.
Yeah, we don't. It's more of a feature of kind of how we do some successful onboarding, but we're just talking about the difference between U.S. hiring and how it's tough nowadays, and we're able to do things that the U.S. can't. And a great example is that a 2-for-1. For example, if you ran a 3PL and you needed a 4 carrier sales reps, we're actually going to go and hire 8, right? We probably interview 10 to 15, hire 8 and let the 3PL work with all 8 of them for 2 months, for 60 days. And then from there, we decide, hey, who's making the most phone calls? Who's covering the most loads? Who has the best profit margins? And then you can just keep the best 4 out of the 8 from there. It's pretty unique on our end that we do.
Yeah. And you're able to move them to other projects, these other people to other projects. In many cases, this allows you to get a sense for the workforce and also train the workforce. Because I think there's probably a little bit of a learning curve to making sure you understand how these companies want to work. But I know this just from my conversations with people on here is I don't know anybody who's used BPO who says we used to do that.
Right.
Once they do it, they are going to do it because the value is just so great. And again, I do believe it all starts with you save me money. Everyone wants to save money, but that's just the beginning. And it reminds me of being a 3PL. You never, ever get a customer unless you save them a little bit of money. Nobody ever says, we picked a new 3PL, we picked a new broker. They're only a little more expensive. Nope, you got to bring savings. But then the next thing, you got to keep them with constant improvement, continuous improvement, the technology, the service has to be what they expected. But everybody wants to save that money up front to feel like, I'm not even so sure that's the right thing, but that's how we all behave.
Yeah. And I think you're right. The price has to be right for anything you're buying, right? If it's costing you more to do it than it is saving you money, you're just not going to move that business forward. It's just a prerequisite for buying either a technology, working with a BPO company. But I agree. At the end of the day, you have to drive return on investment. You have to drive value. And if luckily for us, we can 10x our value, we can 20x our value. So it's very easy to, I think, what's our stat? 94% of our customers grow with us within the first 60 days. And it's just because it's like, hey, you see it, it works. And you're going to be like, this is awesome. Where else can we leverage this? We hired you for third shift. Let's try accounting. Let's try carrier sales. And so it's just our business model. So let's start small. Let's figure it out and we'll grow with you as it makes sense for your business.
And by the way, it reminds me, and they went out of business, but still a great company. they raise the bar, Convoy would say, as soon as we see a problem, we put headcount on it. And then at some point we automate it. And we oftentimes have gaps in our technology where we need a head, but we know on the technology roadmap, we're going to fill that with technology at some point. But so you don't want to necessarily say, I'm going to go get a head, pay them good money, train them, and then lose them as soon as we automate it. But in your business model, it works because you say, look, we can move those people around within our organization. So I love what you guys are doing. So if somebody wants
even to work for them, we have that's a great example of big guys leverage. We have hundreds of people that worked for them. They had hundreds in the Philippines. Tons of people work for us now that used to be on their team that are all in the Philippines. It's like you think of them as a technology company. They had a huge staff out in the Philippines.
Yeah. Again, that's you brought it up is we love to think about everything being automated with tech and oh my God, nobody has to do anything. But somebody said this on my podcast the other day, you will not be replaced by AI. You will be replaced by another person who is using AI. And Nick, if somebody wants to work with you guys, how long does it take to get started? How's that look?
Yeah. So for us, if someone called us and they were just wanted to try those carriers, it's going to take me about 2 weeks to find the right candidates for the role.
So do they interview them or do you interview them? How does that work?
So we have three interviews on our side. So it starts with our recruiter, then it goes up to a manager, and then a director level on our side will do a final interview, but then we'll pass it to a client. So that way they do the final approval. So we know what it takes to be
successful. Are they interviewing them by Zoom or something like that?
Yeah. Just some exactly how we're talking today. Just a screen share. If you want to fly to the country and interview, you can do that, but I don't recommend it. Sounds pretty expensive. But yeah, just over a screen share, something like that.
Now that you're in Belize, don't be surprised if there's people from Chicago and Detroit and all the rest of the cold places. We'll be down for 2 weeks in February, Nick, to do interviews.
Yeah.
Anyway, so how do we reach out and talk to you guys?
Yeah. So if anybody is just curious how we do things a little bit differently or wants to ask us about Belize, I know that's a unique country for a lot of folks that are in this arena or the Philippines. I would honestly recommend just reaching out to me directly, right? My email is nick@valaroo.com. Pretty short. We can just have a conversation. If you want to be past sales and go through a whole presentation, I can do that. Or the two of us or your team, we can just have a more high level conversation to learn a little bit more.
Yep. So one more time, who's the sweet spot for Valaroo?
I would say number one people we support is probably brokers, 3PLs and brokers, followed by asset-based carriers. And lastly, shippers. We do a little bit in the shipper realm, but much more in the transportation over the road. LTL, intermodal range.
Excellent. Excellent. So put a bow on this bad boy. Nick, we covered a lot of ground. Summarize it for us. Give us your final thoughts on the topic.
Yeah. If you're not leveraging outsourcing, you should absolutely explore it. It's a great way to provide your current employees more work satisfaction, also help your bottom line. And then if you are, and there's just something, if you don't have great retention, if you're not finding the right talent, if you're having to fly out of country 3 to 4 times a year to manage these folks, I'd highly recommend us just having a conversation because there's a better way to do it than you are today.
I love it. I love it. So what I'll do is I'll put a link to your LinkedIn profile, link to your website, and any other links you and your marketing team give me, we'll put a link in the show notes so people can reach out and talk to you. What conferences will we see you and the fine folks from Valaroo at?
I think we talked about it. I'm going to be at Manifest. This is probably coming out after that. But TIA, I believe, is there. Food Shippers.
That's in April in Phoenix?
Yes, that's in Phoenix. What's the Broker Carrier Summit in Kansas City? The
Broker Carrier Summit's in Kansas City. I think that's in April too, right after TIA, a week or so after.
Yeah. And right in there, I'm pretty sure Food Shippers is in Vegas again, but I'm not positive. But those will be the three I'll be at.
Love it. I love it. Nick, thank you so much for taking the time. I really love what you guys are doing. It is such an important piece of our business, and it just came very quickly.
Yeah, for sure. I agree. Thanks, Joe. Pleasure. Thanks, everyone.
You're very welcome. And thank all of you for listening to my podcast. Your support's very much appreciated. Until next time, onward and upward. You have been listening to the Logistics of Logistics podcast, where we engage with leaders in the logistics and supply chain community. If you like what you hear, please subscribe, hit the like button, and leave us a nice review on Apple or Spotify or wherever else you listen. Also, please check out our videos on YouTube and connect with us on LinkedIn. We're very big on LinkedIn. And you can also reach us on the logisticsoflogistics.com, our website.